La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Welcome to episode 7 of TritonCast. This is the podcast for UC San Diego Athletics.
In today's Triton Spotlight, we chat with women's water polo alum, Sarah Lazat. She was one of the best players in the history of UC San Diego water polo, and her name is all over the Triton record books. Since graduation, Sarah has played professionally in Spain. What has that experience been like, and how has she been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic? We'll find out in the Triton Spotlight.
But first, let's go around campus. Our Fab Five series continues on UCSDTritons.com. We ask scholar athletes from a variety of sports to share their favorite images from their time on campus and explain why. You can check that series out online now. Also, our popular Between Two Zooms series rolls on, where we catch up with Triton scholar athletes in a video conversation with ESPN broadcasters. Our most recent episode was with Julia Makabuhai from the women's basketball team. And on Thursday, we catch up with a national champion, that's Spencer Daly from our swimming program. And finally on the web, work continues on enhancements at Triton Soccer Stadium. You can read all about the updates and check out a photo gallery of the progress on UCSDTritons.com.
Now it's on to our Triton Spotlight. Here's our chat with women's water polo alum, Sarah Lazat.
Sarah, tell us what life has been like during the pandemic living in Spain.
It's been interesting to say the least. I feel like all of this has been pretty unexpected for everyone, and obviously myself included. I think that it's kind of been an adjustment. Of course, all of us are living from our homes, and I'm sure many Americans and many Europeans feel really trapped. So it's been interesting. I think the quarantine here was a lot different than maybe what a lot of Americans were dealing with when all of this kind of started in March. It was a lot more strict here. There was only, we were only able to leave our homes to go to the pharmacy or to go to the grocery store. So things like that, it was difficult to say the least, but I was on my own here, living alone for a 2-month period. It was definitely difficult. It's better now. There's definitely less restrictions, a lot more normalcy. It's been an interesting several of months now.
No question. I think we're certainly feeling that here in the States. For you in Spain, how quickly was there a shutdown? How quickly did everything kind of come to a halt?
So I think it was on March 13th was our last day of training, and there was no going to the office or to the club or anything like that. And then on March 15th, I think is when they declared the official lockdown. And I say lockdown, that sounds really bad, but the official quarantine. And yeah, that was kind of the date. And then we obviously went through periods of, there were 2-week periods where kind of they would tell us if we were going to continue in the state of alarm or if we were going to kind of move out of it and things like that. But yeah, it was all definitely on edge, not knowing kind of what was to come next, seeing the virus kind of make its way through Europe, obviously, into the US and obviously to South America and things like that. It was definitely impactful.
And how did that affect your season? It stopped, right?
Yes. So like I said, we had stopped training, I think on the 13th it was. And then, so for several weeks, the league didn't really take any type of action as to kind of what we were going to do moving forward, because I think they were obviously like everyone waiting it out, seeing what was going to happen, a lot of uncertainty. And then I think it was probably in April, maybe mid-April, they had decided to kind of cancel the league, declare a champion, and that was the end of the season.
And if I'm reading these standings correctly, which definitely might not be the case, it looked like your team was in second place, so you were right there, right? So it almost something was taken away from you?
Yeah. We were second place when they determined the league as, you know, finished. And so, yeah, it was definitely, it would have been difficult to be champions of the league, obviously, but it wasn't impossible. And that was, yeah, it was definitely difficult. We had an opportunity that we couldn't see through. And for me personally, that would have been probably, well, this is the best I've finished keep playing here in Spain since I started in 2015. So it would have been the best finish. It obviously was the best finish, not on my terms, unfortunately. So definitely a positive, but not the way we all kind of would have wanted to end it.
And give us a sense of how the season is supposed to work in terms of the structure of the league and how matches are laid out and the time of year and that kind of thing.
Right. Okay. So it is definitely different than, and this was adjustment for me, obviously, when I first came here. The season is kind of all year long as far, I mean, this like the academic year, September till around May. That's the length of the season. So we start training at the end of August, beginning of September, and we'll train and play until May. And so what that means is that we have games every weekend. We play in European Champions League. I don't know if you aren't familiar with any type of European leagues or soccer leagues or things like that, then you probably aren't familiar with this, but this just means that we play in the Spanish league, obviously, and then in the European league. So if you finish top three in your league, then you have an automatic bid into the Champions League or the European league. And so that was our case this year. We were able to play in the Euro League, and that will be the case next year as well. So that's kind of how the season that's how it goes. Basically, we have games every weekend, and if you are playing in Champions League, then obviously that means more games, more intensity, longer weeks away. But if you are not, you're playing in the Spanish league, which is still very competitive. And this means that you have games every weekend, between teams in Spain.
And you're in Barcelona, and how many teams are in the Spanish league?
So there are, I mean, the Spanish league is massive. It's the honors division, which is the top division, which is the division that my team plays in. And then there's first division and second division. And so in the honors division, there are 12 different teams. The men also have 12 teams as well. But in general, there are many, many, many clubs in Spain, in Barcelona alone, which is kind of shocking, but Barcelona is kind of a hub for water polo. In Barcelona alone, there's, I believe, 6 to 8 professional teams just in Barcelona.
Wow.
So a lot of water polo, a lot of recognition for the sport in the city, although, I mean, we obviously say there's not enough recognition of the sport because kind of soccer just takes it over, obviously. But it is definitely a hub here in Barcelona.
Why do you think that is? Why is water polo so popular?
I think the 92 Olympics probably helped the growth of the sport. But Europe in general just kind of is very different as far as these smaller sports. And water polo is one of those sports that kind of plays a big role in countries like Italy, obviously in Spain, in Croatia and Serbia, Hungary, Montenegro. So the kind of, it's a different dynamic than, I mean, you would be amazed to see in Hungary, for instance, or in Montenegro, the support that is given to these water polo players and the sport in general. It's for me, it's astonishing. I've never seen anything like it. I think it's obviously, I value that because it's a sport I've been playing my whole life. So to see people kind of behind it is really admirable. But in Barcelona, I really do think obviously the 92 Olympics has helped a ton. And there are tons of clubs just in the Barcelona area that are like like swim clubs, basically. And so they center around aquatic sports, and that makes a big difference. And we don't see that in the US.
What originally drew you to Barcelona to play professionally?
So I had always had the intention of playing professionally after I graduated. I don't think, and that was something that I had communicated with my coaches at the time. I just wasn't ready to let go of the sport. I was still in my prime. I still feel like I'm in my prime, but, I definitely felt like there was still more that I could offer. So I kind of wanted to see it through, and I wasn't aware. I didn't know kind of what there was outside of, you know, the US and as far as the sport and all of that. But, I got in contact with some teams in France and then some teams obviously in Spain and then a couple in Australia as well. And just the league in Spain is just very, very competitive. And that was what drew me to play here. It was really just, Australia has a great league as well, but it was in no way as competitive as the league in Spain. So that was kind of what drew me initially.
Did you grow up in a bilingual household, or how or when did you learn Spanish?
No, I'm still learning. No, I'm definitely bilingual now. I definitely did not grow up in a bilingual home. Although I have family who from Mexico, and my grandmother was born in Mexico and all of that, but she did not speak Spanish to us, nor to her children. So that was not something that I had as a child growing up. So I definitely had to learn when I moved here, and that was interesting. But I'm definitely bilingual now. Obviously, I've been here for quite some time. But yeah, that was an interesting experience as well.
What other adjustments were there for you when you first moved to Spain in terms of different culture and so on?
Wow. Yeah. Obviously food is probably up there as far as adjustments and all of that. So I came here on my own. I didn't have, I didn't know any, I knew maybe Josh Styling, who played for the men's team when I graduated. He decided to come to Barcelona as well to play. So I knew him. We're just friends. So it was just kind of an easy transition as far as knowing one person in the same city. But I definitely say that food was probably a huge adjustment coming here. The style of eating, the time when they eat is very, and I don't know if you're familiar with Spanish culture or listeners, but they tend to do everything a lot later. So my normal American lunchtime at noon at 12 was now pushed to like 2:33 PM. And then my dinner time, which was normal for us, maybe like six, seven, like would be considered late, I guess seven, was now pushed to like 11 PM. So that was a huge adjustment, and kind of what to eat and things like that. Those were huge adjustments. The training schedule as well. Their afternoon training is at noon. So that's the morning training, excuse me. The morning training is at noon. So that was for me, not morning, obviously. And then their afternoon training is at 8:30 at night. And that was, again, strange, but something I obviously had to deal with if I wanted to continue to stay here and grow with, obviously, the program and the sport.
That's a tough culture for a morning person, I would bet.
Yeah. And I think it's funny because when I go home, I wake up early and I'm like, what am I doing? I would never wake up this early in Barcelona ever. And so it's interesting when I do go home, I kind of just make that adjustment just because the people you're around and you accommodate and work with in the culture that you're in, you know, I feel like that's kind of what I've learned to being here is just kind of being flexible and going with whatever's going on, the flow, you know? But yeah, it was an interesting adjustment.
We're chatting with Sarah Lazat on Triton Cast. How often do you get back home and how do you keep in touch with family?
So I try to go home twice a year, for Christmas and then for summer months. And every year it seems that I'm here in Barcelona, the less I go home, just because I obviously have more more compromises here that I have with people and jobs and the sport and things like that. So it seems that I go home less now, but I definitely make it home during the holidays and then sometime during the summer. So about twice a year. And besides that, not much. I was home last month during all of this, during the quarantine. I did go home for several weeks, for about 3-ish weeks, just to kind of spend time with my family during all of this. So that was clearly very nice. I didn't do much, just stayed home and relaxed, but got to spend time with family, saw a couple of friends. But yeah.
And I don't mean this in a political sense at all, but in terms of the way the quarantine took place and came about in Spain, I'm guessing is quite different than what we've had here in the US.
Yes, very different. And it was, it sounds crazy, obviously, but it was definitely a cultural shock going back to California and being home here in Barcelona. I mean, everyone wears a mask. It's not a political statement. It's everyone does it. And there's no question. It's just, they do it. And I'm obviously not everyone. There are some people who don't, and maybe that's okay. But it was definitely strange going back to California and seeing just kind of the, I don't want to say ignorance, but I definitely want to say just this kind of lax attitude towards all of it, you know? And I think for me, because I lived it so deeply and so it was so real and it was a part of my everyday life, that going back to California and just seeing restaurants filled with people and people just walking on the streets with no care about this pandemic was just shocking to me. And again, I support many people and their ideas and their way of living and going about their lives. And I don't want conflict in that way, but I lived it. So it was so real for me, you know? So I think that was kind of, it affected me quite a bit going back and seeing that. But yeah, it is definitely different. The attitude towards this pandemic, in the US and here in Europe has been very, very different.
What was it like physically traveling during that time and flying across the Atlantic Ocean and then across the entire North American continent to get back to California? What was that travel experience like?
I've said this to many people and it was the best travel day of my life. And that sounds crazy and it sounds absurd because I had to wear a mask the whole time, but it was so easy. There weren't many people. There was literally like ghost town at the airport. So like the normal stress that you get from going to the airport, seeing all these people with their bags in the way, blah, blah, like all these crazy things that happen, just hours of going through security or going through whatever, which is not the case. It was so easy and it was shocking, but it was one of the best travel experiences I've had. Flights were on time, no delays. Got to LAX. Got out of LAX in, I think, 15 minutes once I was off the plane.
That's not possible.
And I know. It's not. It is. And it was. And I feel like it was like craziness. I didn't believe it. And there was no one at LAX. No one. It was like you drive into LAX and there's just thousands of cars. And you're like, I'm never going to make it to my terminal because I have to go to Tom Brady International. It's on the other side. And I'm not going to make it, you know? And there was no one. And it was eerie and strange, but at the same time, nice, you know? It was interesting, but yeah, easy. Shocking, but a reality.
Going back to Barcelona, we talked a little bit about the pandemic and what that was like living there. What about the Black Lives Matter movement? You know, we've seen certainly since the murder of George Floyd in the United States, there have been much louder and more frequent voices demanding change. And we've seen here in the States that has spread over to Europe and beyond as well. What was that like in Barcelona?
Mm-hmm. So this all happened, and I will say this all happened during a time where we were still in like half quarantine type of situation. So we weren't allowed all these freedoms still, but it definitely happened during a time where it shook people here too, I think, you know, and I will say that media and the type of coverage that we get here in Europe and in Spain is different than the media that we would get at home in the US. And obviously, if it weren't for technology and social media, that maybe the way I would be receiving my information and things like that would be different. But definitely affected people here as well. There were people did take to the streets. There were organized protests. And yeah, I think that not just obviously in Barcelona, but in other main cities throughout Europe, people were affected by this and rightly so. I think that this is something that, you know, we obviously see in the US more often than we want to, unfortunately. And I definitely don't think, and these are conversations that I've had with a lot of friends that I have here, you know, and just like, well, why do you guys treat Black people the way you do, you know, and these questions. And it's like, I think that also in Europe, they need to really look at the way they treat minorities, you know, and people who maybe don't fit this idea of a European city or European culture, you know. And it's interesting for me being here and experiencing that and not being in it in the US. Do you know what I mean? So it definitely affected people here, but I think it made people have those tough conversations. And I think that's what the beautiful, I don't know if it's beautiful, but the beautiful part about social media and us being so connected is that it forces people to have conversations. And I think that that is what obviously has changed throughout history and what I've seen, you know, and through time, is that maybe 30 years ago, people weren't forced to have this conversation, or 50 years ago, people weren't forced to have this conversation because there was no immediate coverage, you know, and now there is. And it's great and beautiful in a way that it makes you have those uncomfortable conversations that maybe you wouldn't have had before. And not just in the US, here in Europe as well, and here in Barcelona and in my life, and I see it. And those are conversations I've had with teammates, with friends. And it's tough. It's tough. It's tough to explain, definitely.
Do you have teammates or are there several in your league who are American?
Last year there were. I had one American teammate. And then there were several other Americans here last year. I'm not sure what the league will look like this year, but there were several Americans here last season. Mm-hmm.
When you first came over in 2015, how did you acclimate and get settled to not just the culture, but also being that minority and being somebody who might be looked at a little bit differently?
My first year here was very difficult. And it's funny that you ask me this because, this was a conversation that I had and obviously my skin color doesn't make me, you know, I don't feel like I am not privileged. You know, I feel like I am privileged and maybe my skin color has something to do with that, you know? And I think that coming here and not knowing the language and not understanding the people that were speaking to me or my teammates or my coaches and not adjusting as quickly maybe as I wanted to, you know, these are types of, these are types of things that I had to adjust to and that I saw that other people were maybe treated me differently because of it, you know, and it was hard. My first year was really, really difficult. I was definitely treated differently. I did not have a good experience with my teammates or playing. I mean, I could go into many details, but it was not a good experience. And I think that it affected me as a person. It affected me as a player. It affected me as far as my character and my personality. And it changed me. It definitely changed me. And it forced me to grow up a lot. It forced me to trust less, which sounds, I mean, I'm not, people who know me in at UCSD or know me from 5 years ago in you know, playing at UCSD and things like that, they would describe me in a certain way. And I still am that same person, but a lot of things have changed and it was not pleasant. But I use that to kind of, that to kind of motivate me to want to continue to play, want to continue to have a positive experience, and not just for the people that were a part of that, but for me. You know, I wanted to feel like, you know, water polo has given me so much, and I want to make sure that I fulfill that and live that out, you know.
We're chatting with Sarah Lazat on TritonCast. You mentioned a little bit earlier about when your time was done at UC San Diego, you still wanted to play professionally, and that's why you ultimately pursued this opportunity that brought you to Barcelona. But I know after graduation, you worked in the quote unquote real world for a few months. Was there a moment that you said, no, I'm going for this? And you said, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this.
Yes. So I worked up in Northern California for about 6 months, and it was a grind. It was really great. I love my job. I worked for Gallo Wine Company up in Northern California. And it was great. I loved what I did. I loved the people that I worked with. It was really rewarding, but it wasn't enough. I mean, it was enough, but it wasn't, I still wanted something more with the sport. And so I think that's why I decided to let it go. And that was tough in itself. I had many conversations with managers and with many people. And, you know, they had promised me, or they had told me that if, you know, things didn't work out in Barcelona, I could come back and have my job and everything would be great and blah, blah, blah. And I was very thankful, very, very thankful for that. But I wanted to see out the possibilities that I had with water polo.
How different, or let me ask in a better way, is the international game different than the collegiate game?
1,000%. So different. It's so different. I don't even know where to begin with that question, honestly. But it is very different. We water polo, and then I think that's maybe the water polo culture is changing a bit in the US as well. And it's hard to say, right? So we look at the women's national team in the US and they're the best in the world. But we look at the men's national team in the US and they're not the best in the world. We look at teams that play here and clubs that play here. And I think that if they were to go to the US, they would dominate any collegiate program. The best club team in Spain or the best club team in Italy would dominate any collegiate team in the US. And I don't know. I mean, this has been something that's been in my head for years, obviously, but I just think it's this kind of dynamic about sport in general. It's different. The way we train is different here. The reason why we train is different here. And I think that that's something that maybe in the US is not, has not, maybe, I don't know. I didn't see it when I was in the US. I have a million great memories of UCSD and my club teams in California, but it's just different. The mentality, I think that's probably what I want to say. The mentality and everything behind sport in general is just, has no comparison.
What do you do out of season to keep busy and presumably make some money?
So I work as a recruitment consultant right now for water polo. I work with several athletes who are making that transition from high school to water polo. And for people who are good athletes and have, you know, those contacts because coaches reach out to them and things like that, that transition from high school to university is really easy for many, many high level athletes. But those athletes who maybe aren't as top or as, you know, as good as other athletes, maybe they need help. And so I think that's what I found, is that I can provide that just because of experience and contacts, obviously, that I have in the US. That's something that I've been working on as I've been here, and not just American athletes, but international players as well. So I'm also working with Spanish players who would love to go to the US to play water polo. So that's been an interesting, I don't want to say hobby because it's definitely not a hobby anymore, but it is something that I found that I enjoy. I love working with young athletes. They're obviously hungry to go play at the college level. And that excites me. It's fun. And it's fun to see them excited about it. You know, it's fun to see their reaction when they receive an email from a potential university program, you know, or a college program that they like, you know, and seeing that excitement in them is obviously very rewarding for me.
And how has that changed, or has it, during the pandemic?
It has been interesting because, I mean, as you know, and I'm sure you guys see it, the recruiting process has changed a lot, right? This summer, there are no tournaments. There are no means of recruiting really for any sport. And so, a lot of big tournaments happen for water polo during the summer. And so this has just kind of been eliminated as far as, opportunities for coaches and athletes to kind of go through that recruiting process. So I have definitely seen more athletes reach out to me as far as wanting help, kind of what they should go, what next steps they should take and things like that. It definitely hasn't stopped the recruiting process since the pandemic, but it's definitely put a hold on it. But it, like you said, like we had talked about earlier, it's just kind of, we got to find ways to make it work, you know? So we have to find other ways of getting those athletes out there, getting them seen by coaches, getting these coaches to see these athletes. So it's been interesting, but not impossible. And it's definitely still happening.
How old were you when you started playing water polo?
I was, I think I was ten. My swim team had started a water polo program. And so the coach had asked me to join and I started and I said, okay. And that was it.
So you were a swimmer as well. Did you play other sports?
I did karate for probably about 13 years. Well, no, 11 years. And that was kind of the only other sport that I did. I was very serious about it. So it took up a lot of my time as well. And then kind of when water polo was taking more time than I thought, I let it go. And so I've been definitely playing. I mean, that was the main thing, swimming and then karate and then water polo obviously took over.
Was there a point where you realized you were pretty good at it and you wanted to be a little more serious about it?
Yeah, I did the Olympic development program, with USA Water Polo, and I was playing club water polo at a pretty elite club in California or in Orange County. And then obviously with my high school team, and I just had no time for anything else. And I knew that this was something that I was dedicating a lot of my time to. So I felt right. And I just went with it and it's taken me a long way.
And what ultimately drew you to UC San Diego?
I think it's still the same. You still can only take 5 recruiting trips, right? And I took my 5 recruiting trips and I had applied to UCSD as well on my own. And I wasn't getting recruited by UCSD at all. But I had taken 5 recruiting trips to other completely different schools. And it was the day I was taking my last recruiting trip, I think, to LMU in Los Angeles. And Jenna Williamson now, she was the old assistant coach at UCSD. I think she's still a part of the program in some way, but she called me and she asked me if I wanted to come take a visit at UCSD. And I told her, I'm on my last visit now. I don't have any more. And she said to come out and do a day visit. And she would meet with me, her and Brad would both meet with me. And that would be it. But she had said, you know, honestly, we didn't think your grades were good enough to get in. So that's why we didn't recruit you. And I was like, okay. And she said, but you got in on your own, which is great, obviously. So we commend you and all of that and come out and see us. And so I did. And I just spent one afternoon in La Jolla and saw a game, talked with Brad, talked with Jenna, loved the school. I mean, I think UCSD speaks for itself. And that's what I tell a lot of people. But obviously fell in love and decided that it was the right fit for me.
What are some of your favorite memories from being part of that program at UCSD?
Wow. So many. I came away with really, really, really good friends from UCSD and from the UCSD community in general. And not just water polo, not just the water polo community, although it was fantastic, but the UCSD community in general. I met a ton of people who have influenced my life in one way or another and continue to influence my life and are still really great friends. But memories as far as maybe water polo goes, I think winning the first Harbor Cup was maybe a really great water polo memory. It was obviously a big deal for us at that time. And I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the Harbor Cup, but it is a big deal for the water polo team at UCSD, playing against crosstown rivals at San Diego State. So that was a big plus and a great memory. Obviously winning the league 3 years out of the four that I was there and going to play in the NC2A tournament was definitely our huge, huge memories. But like I said, I think coming away with kind of the UCSD community in general is what was really important for me and continues to be important in my life.
Our guest on TritonCast is Sarah Lazat, former water polo standout at UC San Diego. You were a communications major and a business minor. What were your post-graduation plans besides wanting to pursue professional water polo?
So I started working, and that was kind of something that I had explored. I explored the world of sales. I really liked it, and I still like it. I have been enrolled, and I am enrolled in Johan Cruyff. It's an sports institute here in Barcelona. And I've taken just one course, and I'll take one again this upcoming year in 2021, a sports management course. It's like it's a master's basically. Deciding if I want to pursue the whole master's program or not. It is difficult, obviously, with my schedule. They do make it easy because it's a sports institute. So they're very accommodating. I would like to continue to study in one way or another. I think that, studying obviously stimulates the brain in many ways and it forces you to kind of grow and experience new things, and it's fun. And I didn't think I'd ever say that, but, after I graduated, I definitely didn't have any plans to study anymore or to pursue any type of master's degree or an MBA program or things like that. But I find it as I get older, I would still like that to be a part of my life and continue growing in that way.
Funny how life works, isn't it? So I want to read you some accolades that from your accomplishments from your time at UC San Diego. Some of these are astounding. A 4-time first team All-America, 2-time Division II Player of the Year, the program's all-time leading goal scorer, the program's all-time leader in assists, and only one player in UC San Diego history has ever scored 90 goals in a single season. That's you, of course, but you did it 3 times. Are there any of those that I just read out that you're most proud of?
No. There's not one that I'm like, wow, that one was really good or really hard or whatever. No, I always think that I could have done better. And that sounds crazy. But no, I'm proud of what I obviously accomplished. It would not have been possible without obviously my coaches and my teammates and all of that. And it's weird to hear all of that now. And honestly, I don't think about it often. I don't think about all of that often. And although it was very important in my life and at that moment, and it will continue to be very important, I don't look at it as a number or as, you know, oh, that game gave me 90 whatever goals. I don't look at it that way. You know, I learned a lot about myself through all of that, and I continue to do so. But no, I'm obviously very grateful that I can be a part. I think what's most prideful for me, obviously, is that I can continue to be a part of this program in one way or another, even if it's my name with a number by it, you know. I think that's what's most important to me. I wanted to go to UCSD because I wanted to impact a program. That was what I had told Brad and when I had started, that I want to be a part of a program where I can impact it and I can, you know, not make a name for myself, but make a name for UCSD and for this water polo community and program in general. And I think that, well, I mean, I hope that I did, you know, so that was, I think for me, probably my biggest accomplishment.
Clearly you speak very fondly of your experience and the impact that the program had on you. Do you keep up with the team now, even though you're far away?
Yes, I still keep up with them. If you're talking about the current team, I had a Zoom call with them maybe a month or so ago, and all maybe more than that. When all of this was going on, Brad does like weekly chats with them, and so I was the first person to speak with them, I think, in one of their Zoom calls, and it was great. And to be honest, I feel very disconnected from the current water polo team, unfortunately, just because I can't go to alumni events and things like that because I'm playing or I'm training all year round. And, you know, in October is when alumni weekend is and I can't make it because I'm here. And it's unfortunate. And I will one day next year, I will hopefully. And so it is a bummer, but I still follow them and I still follow kind of their accomplishments and all of that. And, you know, I was bummed to see them, you know, going through all of this. I think as a university student and in a college athlete, it's really difficult with the coronavirus and all of this. But apart from them, the alumni community, I'm still in a ton of contact with them and the men and the women's side. I think UCSD's water polo community is very, very strong and very, very well put together. I think that we all stay in a lot of in contact and we're all, you know, I mean, friends, not all of us, I'm sure, but we enjoy each other, you know? So when I go home, I definitely reach out to UCSD alumni, and water polo athletes, ex athletes or alumni when I am able to go home to San Diego and all of that.
How much longer do you plan to continue playing?
This is it. This is my last season. I was debating finishing this past 2019-2020 season. But everything that has happened, has allowed me to decide that this upcoming 2020-2021 season will be my last. And then hanging up the cap and calling it. I've been captain for this team that I've been playing on now for 4 seasons, which is crazy. 4 seasons. And it's just time, not because physically or anything like that or injuries, knock on wood. But I just am ready to move on from the sport. It's just, and I've always said that I wanted to do this on my terms, you know, and not have it be for something else. And so I'm happy. We have a very, very, very strong team this year. We're playing in Champions League and we have all the possibilities in the world to win the league and go really far in Champions League as well. And I hope we do. But after this season, it'll be my last.
What went into that decision for you? I mean, clearly you gave it a lot of thought, but was there a moment where you had that moment of clarity and said definitively, this is it?
I say it now and I feel like, I mean, my coach laughs too. My current coach, he's like, yeah, we'll see, you know, like we'll see what happens. Like, no, we're not going to see what happens. I've already decided, you know, like this is it. But there's nothing really definitive. I think that, you know, water polo takes up a lot of my time. I train 25 hours a week and then travel and it takes up a lot of my time and a lot of my energy. And I'm very thankful for it because I'm 27 years old and I'm still playing a sport that I love. And I think that speaks a lot about what this sport has given me, but I just think it's time to pursue new things. And I think I'm finding myself more excited about new possibilities and new opportunities and things like that. So I think that for me is a sign that maybe it's time.
On the UCSDTritons.com website, your bio, which obviously is from several years ago, says that you plan on traveling after graduation. So I guess that part was true.
Yeah, I guess.
It's one way to see Europe, right?
Live there.
So final moments with Sarah Lazat on TritonCast. So what is next for you? Have you figured that out after this coming season?
No, I don't know. Like I said, I'd like to pursue an MBA program. I think I've had a couple offers to pursue coaching. And they would obviously help out with the MBA fees and things like that. So that would be an ideal situation if I can find a program that would cover that and I could still be a part of the water polo community and contribute my knowledge and my love and passion for the sport. That would be an ideal situation. There are several other things that I would like to pursue as well on a personal level. I still would like to continue consulting. I think that that's something that is a great way for me to contribute as well. And I think, and I say contribute because I think that I don't ever want to leave the water polo community. I think that I've been a part of it for so long now, it wouldn't feel right leaving it, you know? So finding a way to kind of use my work and my knowledge about the sport and combine the two would be an ideal situation.
And lastly, for those of us in the US who want to follow your upcoming season, how best can we do that?
So there is, you can follow me on Instagram. That's probably the best situation. But other than that, there's a website, the Spanish Federation, and you can follow it on there and they have all the results. My club team also has an Instagram page. The club is Club Esportiu Mediterrani, and, they put all the information on there as well. And yeah, I would obviously love if UCSD continued to follow. This has been great. This is the first time that someone from the UCSD Athletic Department has reached out. So I'm really thankful and happy that you guys are doing this.
Well, this is a fantastic conversation, Sarah. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Wow. It was so interesting hearing about Sarah's experience in Spain. I mean, between the pandemic and just what it's like playing professionally over there was so interesting.
Oh, no question about that, Jenny. And you think about the longevity she's had, certainly one of the longest tenured pro careers for any Triton Scholar athlete. At the end of that interview and towards the end of it, when I was calling out some of those accolades, and to her credit, Sarah, very modest about all of it, but just going through some of the accomplishments she had as a water polo scholar athlete here at UC San Diego, there's no question that one day she'll be in the Triton Athletics Hall of Fame, and boy, will that be well-deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. She's one of the greats, and yeah, you see her name all over the record book, and she's just a fantastic person from the women's water polo program.
Well, speaking of fantastic scholar athletes, we got another one coming your way next week. Episode 8 of TritonCast. You're not going to want to miss our conversation with men's basketball alum, Adam Cly. The Alaska native tells us how he got to UC San Diego, what it was like playing professionally, including in Germany, and why he's now back on campus in La Jolla. New episodes of TritonCast premiere each Wednesday.
Thanks so much for listening today. If you enjoyed the show, make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review TritonCast on the podcast platform of your choice. Also, keep up with us on Twitter at TritonCast. And if you've got any suggestions for future guests or just any feedback for us, feel free to email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter @TritonCast.